History by Fire. Go. History by Fire.
Everybody, welcome to History by Fire. I am your host, the Hellenic historian, also known as Andy. And joining me today, I have two very, very special guests, Frank and Christine Sasso. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. And it's Christina.
Christina.
Christina. Don't call her Christine because you will get hurt.
Okay. All right. She's got that body combat all up to par. Cool. How's everybody doing today?
We're in the park
good.
Today.
Very good.
We are in the park today.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I told you it was nature filled. You had an issue with that.
Well, yeah, I love nature.
I didn't have an issue that it was nature filled. I like the way you said it.
Oh, okay.
On the phone. Okay. And I like that intro music. That was very exciting. It sounded a lot like Star Wars.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's actually what we're speaking about today. Today, we are going to talk about the legend and myth and historical influences on Star Wars.
Wow.
Now,
Okay. Yeah, now
Star Wars is a big thing. I mean, I know. I actually keep on thinking about that, and I'm sure it goes for everybody, but my consciousness doesn't exist without Star Wars. I've been rewatching all the old ones on Blu-ray, and I'm just like, wow, like, it's almost like God in a way. What would I be without Star Wars? You know? Now, you guys are a little bit older, so you probably know about life outside of Star Wars. I don't know about a life outside of Star Wars.
That's a little sad.
No. I don't mean like my life revolves around Star Wars. Okay, I'm lying. My life does revolve around Star Wars. But no. I mean, like, you know, the generation that I was born, you know, it always was Star Wars filled or Star Wars influence. Not to mention that, you know, he revolutionized the film anyway. Like, everybody learned from him after him.
George Lucas.
Yeah. George Lucas, he revolutionized sound, which if you look, just close your eyes and listen to the sounds of that movie, is unbelievable. He revolutionized visual, and he revolutionized puppeteering and all the kind of stuff to the next step. So when you have movies like Terminator, The Predator, Aliens, they all borrowed from George Lucas, and then he made these organizations to help introduce that. So that, we can do a whole show on that, but I mean, so the staple is there.
Well, I did find it groundbreaking when I saw it.
Okay.
In the movies.
Okay.
When it came out.
Okay.
In 1977.
That's okay. Why you saw it in the movie theater.
I saw it in the movie theater with my boyfriend, Jay Rawley. Hi, Jay, if you're watching.
/ hearing.
Well, I'll send
you'll
him a...
watch.
He's a friend of mine on Facebook, so...
Yeah, we'll send him the link.
I remember.
Hello, Jay. Anyway. This is Christina's husband, Frank.
Yes, and I was so blown away by it.
Yeah.
I loved it. And I went back to see it. I feel like I went to see it like at least another 10 or 12 times the theater.
Good.
Wait, spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. You actually knew from the get-go.
Oh, yeah. Because I think was it in the first movie where they said...
Hold on. There's no spoiler alert from the original trilogy. If you haven't seen it yet, shame on you. It's really that simple.
They were just born yesterday.
No sympathy.
They're an infant right now.
No sympathy if you haven't watched the original Star Wars trilogy.
Right, so I'm
not even going to go ahead and entertain spoiler. If you didn't see it, shame on you.
Listen, I'm just looking out
for people. Okay, so also I'm going to probably keep saying the first one, which is really not the first one. It's the fourth one?
Episode 4. A New Hope.
Yeah.
Right. Well,
actually, it's not the New Hope. It was added later than New Hope. It was just with Star Wars.
Right, it was just Star Wars.
And then to prove that, just watch the, you can find it on YouTube, where there's the old scrolling intro and then the new scrolling intro, and he put A New Hope much later.
Really?
Yeah, it was known as Star Wars, and then The Empire Strikes Back, and then Return of the Jedi.
Right.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So A New Hope came later.
Well, to go back to the original point of this,
right,
was when you saw the first movie.
Right. The first movie, they alluded to there was another Jedi. And I knew who that was immediately.
Right.
And I also knew that even though it seemed like Luke and Leia would be the love interest, I was like, no. Because he also had Han Solo.
And Han Solo is more of a masculine energy that I'm sure most women, at least at the time, were into.
And I said, oh, I know how they will address this. He's her brother. and she's the Jedi.
Are you a Jedi Knight and you're just not telling us?
And Darth Vader is their father. I knew it immediately. I never said, I don't even know if I told anybody that.
Are you well-versed in mythology and legend and history?
She's like this with almost everything.
Because,
no.
Because that's what we're going over today at some point.
Okay, well, let's...
So...
All right, let's jump in.
All right, so the story starts out with, you know, we have mythic heroes.
Mm-hmm.
These stories of heroes have always had a universal appeal because they are one ancient and timeless. Every hero has a quest, but before he can achieve his heart desires, he has to complete difficult tasks or fight seemingly impossible battles.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Often an evil force must be overcome, or the hero has to learn a new kind of knowledge in order to increase his power. His struggles teach us about our own human potential. In the Star Wars classic saga, Luke Skywalker is a hero for our time.
Right, so Luke has to learn all this stuff.
Right. And, you know, just to go ahead and give you a couple examples, Siegfried, the German hero Siegfried, killed a huge dragon using his great sword, Balmog, and a magical hood, which made him invisible. After bathing the dragon's blood, he became invincible, except for a point between his shoulders.
Ooh.
This was his weak spot. Siegfried won tremendous victories, but he was stabbed in a family quarrel by an uncle who knew his one weakness.
Mm.
Now, I know of a much older version of that. Because a lot of the myths, if you read Joseph Campbell, which is also very influential on George Lucas, who made him write Star Wars, he is a psychologist that somehow puts psychology and myth together. It's Carl Jung psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And in so doing, all the myths of the old time, they're all very similar. They all have very similar. You can find the same characters in each myth. So, for example, Siegfried is German, but we know Achilles, the ancient Greek version.
Right.
Because what was Achilles? His mother dipped him in the invincible liquid, but she held him by his heel.
Right.
And it's the only weak spot, and he got shot in an arrow.
That's right.
In his heel. That's why it's called an Achilles heel.
Mm-hmm. Brad Pitt.
Right. Thanks for bringing that up. I mean, not as accurate as Iliad, but we'll just go with it.
Brad Pitt.
King Arthur is another example. Raised and educated by the wizard Merlin, Arthur became king of Britain after drawing a sword out of an anvil.
Mm-hmm.
Later, he was given a mightier sword named Excalibur by a fairy hand that emerged from a lake. He married Guinevere and organized his knights into the Fellowship of the Round Table. When Mordred, Arthur's nephew, tried to seize power, there was a terrible battle. Mordred was slain, but the kingdom was ruined.
Wait a second. Mm-hmm. I thought the sword was pulled out of a rock.
It was, but it wasn't. According to this, it wasn't Excalibur. That was the first sword. That was that showed him he was the chosen one. And then later on...
And only he could take it out.
Right, but Excalibur, with the actual magical sword, was found in the lake. So according to the Arthurian legend, there were two swords involved. But,
okay.
You know...
Mm-hmm. Huh. Wow. Just
now,
learned a couple of things just now in the first 5 minutes here.
Look at that. Look at that. So the hero goes on a call to adventure.
Right.
In a myth, the hero's journey begins with a call to adventure, the first incident on a dangerous path that will separate him from his home and family.
Mm.
The call usually comes in the form of a herald, who is also a messenger, who carries a message, obviously, that adventure will begin. Often the hero does not recognize a hand of fate at work, and an event which may seem ordinary is in fact a turning point that catapults a hero into the world of danger and excitement.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Okay. So, the heralds are the ones that carried message. So, in this case, they're droids. We know them as R2-D2 and C-3PO.
Mm-hmm.
Luke aspires to become a space pilot, but is torn between his desire to enroll in the academy and his loyalty to his family, who need him on the farm, and the fear that he will never return if he leaves. Luke's life is transformed when his uncle buys the droid C-3PO and R2-D2. Spoiler! From the Jawas. And their arrival heralds the beginning of the quest and enables Luke to discover his true birthright and destiny. He is also accompanied by the wise guide. The hero is often unaware of his destiny, but even when he discovers it, he may try to refuse a difficult quest until a wise guide shows him the way. Obi-Wan Kenobi fulfills this role for Luke, giving him advice, Jedi training, and the mystical knowledge of the Force that he will need on his venture. The path ahead will contain many obstacles to test the hero's skills and courage, but with Obi-Wan's help, Luke takes on the challenge. So, in history and legend terms, the divine oracle, the Greek hero Cadmus, had a wise guide in the form of the oracle at Delphi, where the advice of the god Apollo was revealed. It told him where to establish the city of Thebes, and also, going back to Arthurian legend, Merlin. In most myths, the hero loses his wise guide before completing his quest, which we know from the Star Wars movies, forcing him to develop his own abilities. In Arthurian legend, the magician Merlin tells Arthur of his destiny to unite the kingdom, and uses his magic and wisdom to help the young king.
Wait a minute, Obi-Wan Kenobi. I wonder if he's talking about old Ben Kenobi.
maybe he means old Ben Kenobi.
What are the odds that it's not Obi-Wan Kenobi?
Kenobi.
Yeah.
And they have the same last name.
Maybe Ben Kenobi, who's old.
Kind of like how Superman, has glasses to go ahead and cover his identity.
Yeah, and the highest paid investigative reporter in Metropolis, Lois Lane, can't figure this out. She can't break this code.
Well, also, he had that little curl.
Oh, the S.
Oh, the curl.
Oh,
my mistake. My mistake. At least Batman had a mask and a voice to cover it up.
Yes.
You can put sunglasses on, I still know it's you.
Knowing Gotham, I would also automatically think that Bruce Wayne had something to do with Batman, though, without the voice.
What are you talking about? Something to do with Batman.
Yeah, if your first guess wasn't Bruce Wayne to be Batman, if you're living in Gotham, who else would it be?
All right.
Why would you think it's Bruce Wayne?
Why not? Because he's the most powerful money. Thank you.
He's got money.
Spoiler alert.
He's the only rich guy in Gotham.
Yeah, if you didn't know
but
that,
he's the richest guy
Bruce
in Gotham.
Wayne was Batman.
He's the richest guy. He's also a playboy.
Right.
He's also constantly getting injured on ski trips. With the help of Alfred's backing him up his storyline. And Batman has height with the ears.
His face
is covered. His voice is different.
Whoa.
I'd be like,
if you had a whole lineup.
He's a much better disguise than Superman does.
Well, okay, agreed. But if you had a whole lineup and said, wow, where does he get those wonderful toys? You wouldn't pop up in your mind, well, maybe Bruce Wayne.
There's been a chance of Bruce Lee being Batman.
No, because he's got to have money.
Bruce Wayne, okay, if he has so much money, so does Batman have all these toys. Maybe Bruce Wayne has something to do with it. I don't know. Starting point.
Yes.
That's all I'm saying.
And then you would investigate from there. I would definitely, if I lived in Gotham, I'd be like, oh my God, it's totally Bruce Wayne.
Thank you.
Let's go check it out. And then we'd go and sneak on the property.
I'm number one Batman now.
We'll sneak on the property and we'll get into
She's leading the expedition.
Right.
She's leading it.
Yeah, and she would. You know, you've often called me Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
Well, how do you explain Yoda, then?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't give you Yoda title, so easy. You got to work up to the Yoda title.
Oh, I have to work up to Yoda.
Think about it. Let's tell people why. Why do I call you Obi-Wan Kenobi? Because you are the wise Merlin that has helped me vision the show.
Ah. Oh, your guide. I got you.
I mean, are you not my guide?
Absolutely am.
Like Morpheus.
Like Morpheus.
Okay, Morpheus. But that's another archetype. See, this is exactly the point of the show is Morpheus is great, Obi-Wan is great, but they all have the same role.
Right.
So it doesn't matter what you read. It's almost the same story with different characters.
As does Neo have the same role, which I discovered. We weren't talking about it. I was just laying in bed, half asleep, and I went, oh my God, Neo, it's one. Neo, N-E-O-O-N-E, and he's like, yeah, so.
Wait a minute, Neo is one?
He's the one.
But it's not spelled one.
No, backwards. It's not backwards,
but it's the same letter.
Well, I hate to put a wrench in your gears, but there's a theory that Neo is not the one.
He is the one.
No, apparently, according to this theory, I'm going to send you the YouTube video.
It's a theory. Go ahead.
That it's Agent Smith who's the one, and Neo was created to deceive everybody else. Because Neo is not the one.
Are they going to be more Matrix movies?
I think they're done. They reveal it. You can see the connections in the movie. The guy doesn't go out of the movies to prove it. But apparently, it's almost as if Neo was a virus to make people think he was the one, just to throw everybody off. But the theory is that it's really Agent Smith that's the one.
But that messes it up your archetypes here. Because Neo was this haphazard. Savior.
Well, you know what they say, that Vader really was the chosen one, not Luke. You guys know that, right?
Yes.
So that could be Vader to Agent Smith and Luke to Neo. So it doesn't mess up anything that I just theorized.
Yeah, but that was at least mentioned in, I think it was Star Wars.
That he would bring balance to the Force.
He says, you were the chosen one!
Right.
Who said that?
Ben Kenobi, the young Ben Kenobi to the young Anakin.
Oh. Yeah, but the Matrix though uses footage from the movies to prove that Agent Smith is the one. So it's not like they just went ahead and just pulled it out of their butt.
Revisit the Matrix movies.
Now. I will send you the link and then revisit the movie.
I'll put it on.
I can't. Okay. I can't revisit those movies.
Why not?
Because I saw the Matrix with him, the first one, and I'm like, when they were in that big hall shooting everything, I'm like, okay, I'm done. It's like enough.
What? So when they did one of these?
No, not that one.
That was okay. But when they were in that hall with the big columns, and Tiffany. Trinity was there, and
who's Tiffany? I don't know Tiffany. Do you know Tiffany?
The singer Tiffany. So they were spinning and shooting, and things were falling. I'm like, oh God, how long are we going to be doing this now?
It was like an 18-minute shootout.
That was like too long.
So what's the problem?
I was done. I'm like, I'm done. Is this movie over yet? But anyway. And then the next two I just hated.
Well, I thought the first two were great. The third one I didn't really care for too much.
I didn't like the one with the architect, whatever one that one was.
Oh, that was... Oh, are you kidding me? I had to go jump into my philosophy books and try to track out what they were saying. Like, Descartes. Okay, oh, Immanuel Kant. Oh, I see what you did. I see what you did there.
I'm like, who cares?
I see what you did there.
He slips into Chaucer.
Wasn't that when the helicopter came and Tiffany. Again, Trinity.
Tiffany was not in that movie.
Trinity came.
Well, she jumps through to the helicopter, yeah.
I'm like,
right.
Anyway.
Oh, somebody killed this man already.
You know what? You guys raise a very, very good point that I have on my shelf, my tilting shelf.
Yeah, your tilting shelf.
Tilting shelf.
A book, The Philosophy Behind the Matrix, and The Philosophy Behind Star Wars.
Okay.
So this is probably going to be part one of an 80-part series. Just
80 parts?
Well, maybe. I mean, I'm not going to do 80 parts, but I mean, this is just volume one. There's so much crap on here. The magic talisman.
What does that mean?
In mythology, the wise guide
of the ring.
Gives the hero a magical talisman,
Lord of the Rings,
or amulet to guard and assist him on his chosen path.
Yes.
The idea of a magical sword appears many times in legend. It is a powerful symbol that gives the bearer the right to challenge authority. Obi-Wan gives Luke his Jedi's father's lightsaber, which we know from the new movies is very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And what's very, very interesting is Swords of Power. The Arthurian romance of the Middle Ages envisions Excalibur as a great and shining sword. And they also have elaborate short handles, which was a sign of the owner's wealth and status. So if you ever look in even medieval times, there's always an elaborate design. And there's no different with the lightsaber. Each handle is designed differently. I mean, if you remember Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith, was it Darth, you know, Count Dooku had like almost like a fencing sword. It was like curved. It only had one hand.
Oh, yeah.
So each Jedi, not only do they build their own lightsabers, but they design their own hilts, too, which is a show of signature. And even more on the samurai swords, which we'll get into later.
That's cool.
Yeah. Hero partners. The hero may begin his journey alone, but he soon meets hero partners who will accompany him on his adventure. Luke finds his future companions in the sleazy Mos Eisley Cantina, a drinking hole for space pirates, smugglers, and fugitives of every species in the galaxy.
Oh, here we go.
All right. So, again, going back to Arthurian legend, the Honorable Knights. King Arthur, companions, and defenders were the Knights of the Round Table who met at Camelot. Each knight swore on a pain of death to be loyal to the king, to be merciful, to defend women, never to fight for any wrongful cause. And also Jason and the Argonauts. The Greek hero Jason was assisted by the most famous traveling companions in mythology, including the hero Hercules. Actually, it's Heracles, but I won't get into that. In the ship called the Argo, they set sail on a mission to capture a fabulous treasure known as the Golden Fleece. Medea was a princess who fell in love with Jason and helped him obtain the fleece. So, you have your swords, you have your fleece, you have also Thor's hammer, which is very, very influential in the Norse culture. So, the amulet, the talisman, the thing that you need for your journey is very, very important.
What does Thor's hammer have to do with anything?
What do you mean? Thor's hammer. In Norse legend, the god Thor magic talisman was a mighty hammer called Mjolnir.
I know, I get
the
that,
Vikings believed thunder
that.
Was
Wait a
sound of Thor's hammer blows in battle. What else can I say to you, sir?
Now we're really mixing movies up here together, and it's now getting a little confusing.
No, it's not.
Thor was an alien.
Well,
in the movie, he's an alien, right?
Well, Thor is not from this world. He's not from Earth.
Isn't Loki a... somebody?
It's all Loki. Norse mythology. It's all Viking mythology.
Okay.
Enough said.
I thought I just read that somewhere.
Loki, with his Loki pokey stick, as well as Thor, are half-brothers, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct.
And they are not of this world.
Okay.
Right. They are considered gods of the old times.
And Thor is an Avenger anyway, so...
Right. But basically, to understand that, though, just Marvel just took the idea of Thor and made it into a Marvel character. That's really all you have to worry about.
Right.
Stanley did not invent Thor.
Right.
He brought Thor in.
Right.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
You know. But then again, you can argue that, you know, the Incredible Hulk, who's my favorite, is just really just another version of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. But that's another story for another day.
This is true. This is true.
Okay.
Yes, okay.
Rescuing the princess.
We're getting it all settled today.
We are.
All of it.
We are. Every single part of it.
Right.
Did you guys
here.
See that meme for Game of Thrones on Facebook?
No.
Where we had that one blizzard this year. Mm-hmm. And it shows a scene where he has a sword on the ground and he says, winter's coming. It was like, winter's coming. All of it. In one day. One weekend. I bust my gut laughing. I love it. Memes are like the best of invention.
Memes.
We need to get Game of Thrones.
You haven't seen it yet?
I haven't seen one
don't
minute of it.
Don't ruin any of it because that's
well,
my
I'm
kind
behind,
of show.
Well, I'm behind, but I'll tell you what.
Just ruined some of it already.
No, it didn't.
No, it didn't. Winter's coming.
Yeah.
All you have to know about that is that the main characters are from the northern tribes in the winter, so they're prepared for winter. I wouldn't even call them Vikings. I would call them just the Northern Kingdom.
Oh, okay.
Maybe
that's the joke.
Maybe historically they are the Viking kings who became part of the medieval family, as opposed to just Viking kings. Anyway, if you want, I can give you the Blu-ray for the first season.
I don't have a Blu-ray player. Oh well,
Mr. Technology over here.
I know, right?
Blu-ray
I don't
player.
Have a Blu-ray player.
Isn't
I refuse
like
to sell
a
out.
A DVD player?
Sell out from what?
It's like a rich man's DVD player is what
but
it
we
is.
We watch everything online.
I know.
Sell out from what?
I don't know. From DVD players.
Is Game of Thrones based?
Don't worry. You know what? I think I have the copies on DVD that came with the Blu-ray.
Oh, good.
I got you figured out.
Good.
Ooh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Good.
And
thank
I got
you.
The new Star Wars on DVD, too.
Oh, amen.
Maybe.
I have to say.
I don't give that lightly.
I don't like the new one. I hated it. I'm sorry. The only characters I liked, the only part of it I liked, was Han Solo, Princess Leia, Yoda, and Luke at the very end.
Well, you did like the bad... What's the bad guy's name?
Chewbacca.
No, the bad guy.
Oh, I thought I said bear guy.
I know who Chewbacca is. I like him, too.
It's either Darth Vader or the Emperor.
His bear guy friend.
What bad guy?
No, the bad guy. The Darth who? What's his name?
What is what
Darth Vader? Loudon? What's his name?
What?
What's the new Darth Vader character?
Oh, the new one.
What, you know, Han Solo's son.
Oh, Kylo Ren.
I didn't like him
no,
either.
No, but you
I
liked him. You liked
him.
Kylo Ren when he did Undercover Boss.
That was funny. That the Saturday Night Live skit.
I don't remember.
But going back to mythology, the Knights of the Ren are supposed to be a knighthood. Even his lightsaber is shaped as a knight's sword.
Can I ask another question? Did nobody know that head council guy was the bad guy? Did nobody know this? Was I the only one?
What do you mean?
Come on.
I don't
the guy,
know.
You know the guy, the head guy?
Supreme Leader Snoke.
No.
You know who I'm talking
about.
Yeah,
I know you
the
mean,
one who became the guy with the hood.
Yeah, the councilman, the chancellor.
Are you talking about the original trilogy?
No, I'm talking about this last one. I'm like, come on, guys, you don't recognize this guy in the hood? He's the guy, who's the head of the Senate.
The chancellor.
You're talking about the original trilogy, the Attack of the Clones, Revenge of the Sith, and...
I'm talking
and
about
yeah,
the
yeah,
last...
Yeah.
Yes, but in this movie, played...
He wasn't in this movie. You're thinking about the Emperor.
Okay. Yeah.
He was in the first six.
Whatever. Anyway, did nobody recognize this guy and say, hey, wait
he
a
looked
minute.
Pretty much the same.
It was the same guy before. With the hood
guys,
on.
He had a hood on and his voice was different.
Oh, okay, wait.
That's
I got
right, that's right.
Okay.
Well, we're back to Superman again.
Does anybody know where Frank went? I have a hood on right now.
So it's basically...
Audio
back,
show.
We're back to the Superman.
But I mean, when you have, force manipulation. See, it's not a curl or glasses. It's magical.
Magical, okay.
Right.
So we have to give them the benefit of the doubt.
All right.
Look, I'm willing to buy into this world. You know, it's fine. But
anyway, I did not like the new movie, is this where I was going with this, because I couldn't stand the son. How do these two people who I love have that guy as a son? I don't know.
Meaning Princess Leia and Han Solo.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, two
and,
people that you love. Yeah.
Yeah. And the other person, the new character that I did like was the lady with the big
the
big glasses. What was
Maz Kanata, I think.
Yeah. She was awesome.
She was very interesting, and I'd like to see her again. But everybody else, especially that... Oh, God. That's
I would like to see more.
Well, I'll tell you what. I really like the main bad guy, Snoke, with the big scar across his head. They're saying either A...
The
main guy, the hologram that was teaching...
That guy that I'm saying everyone should have recognized?
No. This guy's different.
I don't know who you're talking about.
Did you see the new movie?
Yes.
We saw it together.
I don't remember
names. Who was Kylo Ren's Who's teacher.
Kylo Ren is the bad guy that you hated.
Who was his teacher? Supreme Leader Snoke. The guy with the bald head.
Oh, that dude. Okay.
His face is all messed up and he's got a scar right here.
Yeah, his mentor.
I thought he was pretty cool. There's some cool theories about either A, they just found him in the Outer Rim because apparently the story is this, that the Outer Rim is like that, the outskirts. Like nobody knows what's going on and the Emperor would go there to get a lot of his knowledge. Mm-hmm. So maybe they found this other supreme evil Sith Lord there.
It's like the Staten Island in that galaxy.
I guess. Yeah, all right, Staten Island. Sorry, my Staten Island friends who heard that from Frank, okay? That was his words. History by Fire does not condone or,
endorse
such opinions. And let me just say, it's possible that it's the teacher of the Emperor, Darth Plagueis. But, I mean, that's a whole different thing. But that's pretty cool. I'm starting to realize that they're starting to get a lot of ideas from the books. Because I don't know if you know, after Return of the Jedi, I guess he was done with his trilogy, and so he allowed people, science fiction writers, to continue the story through the books.
Oh, okay.
But it was cool because George Lucas had to have like final approval of everything. So, according to him, all the books that came afterward were part of the saga. But now, since Disney bought the movie, it's no longer. It's like they can pick and choose what's canon and what's not canon.
Yeah. Well, I don't like that stormtrooper guy. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, Finn.
I don't know his name. Can we please kill him off?
I didn't really care for him. I felt like it was episode 4 all over again, honestly.
You know what, though? I felt that way, too, though. But after watching the behind the scenes, it was done on that purposely, not to rip the story and jack the story, but to make it fit with the rest of the universe. Because if you look at the behind the scenes of the new movie, they hired all the old designers from the original trilogy, and if they weren't alive, there were people who were somehow attached. And what the idea was, they wanted to start out with the original trilogy, that feel to it. So like the same universe. Because as far as I'm concerned, I gotta be honest with you, the first three, Attack of the Clones, episode 1, 2, and 3, they're just they're foreign to me. They don't even sound right. It's not until the middle of Revenge of the Sith where it starts going into the Empire and Darth Vader starts turning do I feel it's really Star Wars. That's why I love the Revenge of the Sith so much. The politics behind it is awesome, but then when it starts to go into the Empire and he turns, it started reminding me of the original trilogy, and I think that's the reason why there's new movies like that. Because they want to get familiarity. And for me, Star Wars isn't Star Wars if it's not familiar. If I'm not seeing TIE fighters and X-Wing fighters and all that kind of stuff,
it doesn't
feel right to me.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like, you feel like you're being robbed.
Exactly.
Right. Yes. And I have a question about the Death Star.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
What do you want to know about the Death Star?
This is very funny. Listen to this.
Should I become a Jedi Knight of all things Star Wars? I'll take it. I love Star Wars. Go.
Listen. Okay. You figure you got some smart guys working on this, right? Why do they always leave the same fatal flaw in the construction of this? So what the Jedi's always attack is, we're going to go for that one little quarter inch area, and we're going to go for that again. Again? You'd think they'd have fixed that flaw last two times they killed us with it. But we're going to build it the same way again. And again, they go and they blow it up in the same exact way.
Well, I think the end of New Hope and the end of the Jedi, they're supposed to be, I guess, at least a little bit different, but I guess the same, the same thing. But you're not supposed to think with Star Wars. You're supposed to enjoy it. Because
I didn't get that memo.
I get your concern, but I mean, if you're going to show me awesome X-Wing battles and they have to go inside and blow something up and they're going to dodge the fire blast and they're going to use their maneuvers, then I would rather see that than realize, oh yeah, it's the same damn Death Star. Although the new one is supposed to be bigger than the old one, but...
Right.
So well, instead of a quarter of an inch, it's a half inch.
They have a bigger target. No. Here's what I loved about the first one, too. I was a very, very, and I still am, a big fan of World War II. Like, World War II history, and the dogfights, and the Nazis. Not that I'm a fan of Nazis.
Of course.
Oh, those wacky Nazis.
But I loved the era. I loved the music. I loved the whole, mindset of that. Like, it was a clear good against evil. The evil was very defined. And when I went to see Star Wars... And I used to watch all the movies, the World War II movies. When I saw Star Wars for the first time, I'm like, oh my God, it's a World War II movie. I mean, you have the Nazis, clearly, Nazi helmets. I mean, they looked like Nazi uniforms.
Yeah.
And it was like that dogfight. It was a clear dogfight. and like, oh, I'm watching a World War II
movie. It's funny you mentioned that because George Lucas would give the set designers those old movies from World War One, like from I guess the 40s and 50s that were the show dogfights between World War One and World War Two, those movies, mm-hmm. and he almost spliced the same exact thing that he was seeing, but with the futuristic Star Wars movies.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
Yeah.
Wow. I could
yeah.
totally
like
see
if you
that.
Again, if you watch the behind the scenes of it's called The Empire of Dreams, where it's like a whole 2.5 hour behind the scenes documentary. It shows one side the old movies and the other side the newer ones, and they're almost exact. Like you can put the voice of the other guys right on top of what Han Solo's doing, mm-hmm. and what on top of what Luke Skywalker's doing, and it's almost like the same movie.
Right.
You
right.
know.
That's interesting.
But I mean, the dogfights are. I just got a book on the Red Baron.
Oh really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Yes, that's my favorite era.
So, rescuing the princess is one of the motifs of these old legends.
Yes.
Entering a labyrinth or a doorway into the...
I'm just trying to punch it up a little bit, that's all.
Please. Be like George Lucas and put in the special effects.
Right.
Entering a doorway into the unknown is often an obstacle the hero must overcome in the course of his journey. When Luke and his companions come out of hyperspace expecting to find Alderaan, their ship is sucked toward the Death Star, a colossal Imperial battle station. With a fatal flaw, as
yes.
Christina just mentioned.
Yes.
Inside, they must negotiate a soulless maze of dimly lit chambers, corridors, shafts, and by chance, Luke discovers that the princess is being held captive there. All right. So, monsters in the maze. Maze in the myths are often come with nasty surprises lurking around the corner. The Greek hero Theseus found his way through a labyrinth to the lair of the Minotaur, a flesh-eating monster that was part bull and part man. After killing the beast in combat, Theseus made his way out of the following trail of thread he had led on entering. Similarly, Luke and his companions meet a sewer-dwelling Diagna, which is like a snake thing, deep in the bowels of the Death Star. Luke is lucky to escape with his life. So, rescuing the princess, a labyrinth maze, so you have the comparison of the ancient Greek myth with a labyrinth and also the Death Star, and then you have the snakes inside in comparison to the Minotaur. So it all lines up mm-hmm. properly.
Well, this, you know, there's, even in life, there always has to be the heroine and the hero.
Right.
In life, it's right. the way we're built.
Exactly.
It's, I believe, the way God designed us.
Right. Well, going back to the Joseph Campbell and the psychology movement or whatever, it's like, it kind of like hits on us. These things we're talking about hits on us biologically. Like, you know, it's
intrinsic.
It's right. It's
DNA.
It's not a mistake that women like masculine energy men, and it's not a mistake that men love women with feminine energy. You know
right.
what I mean? So
right. exactly.
And so these myths just tell that all over again. And so I want to tell people, why don't you read your history and your psychology and all that kind of stuff to understand how these
and
things work?
I will actually recommend a book, Wild at Heart.
Oh, what a great
Wild
book.
At Heart by John Eldridge.
Yeah.
Really explains that whole dynamic.
What's it about? I have a feeling I have that, but I'm not sure.
It's well, about you,
that
you,
book. That
I
like,
read it.
That helped.
Probably...
That really helped change my life. That book when I read it.
Wild at Heart. What's it about?
Wild at Heart is just basically going into how we're designed as men, why we like the things we like, why will we go see Gladiator and Braveheart, and what is it about those kinds of movies that it just does something to guys as opposed to women? And I'm not saying women don't like that kind of thing, but
sure.
why do we like things like football and mixed martial arts? It talks about the need to fight for something, to like stand for
right.
something, to you know, to lock arms with your fellow brothers and
exactly
you know, win the prize,
which is what we're
like,
talking about tonight.
Rescue the,
exactly.
today,
the damsel in distress,
right?
And it even talks about why men have affairs. It's not a sexual thing.
Let me guess, the call to an adventure thing.
Exactly.
It's an absolutely fantastic, fascinating book. I recommend it to men and women alike.
Yeah,
Wild
I
at Heart, John Eldridge. You did read it.
Yeah, I read it, but I read it so long
ago. I'm going to get that book, and I also recommend, too, similar to what you're talking about, Warrior, Magician, Lover, King.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it talks about all these archetypes as men and how we have to go through each and every one of them to become a full, actualized male. And each one has its pros and cons, and you have to go ahead and go past the con mm-hmm. to get through the pros. I'm going to probably do a show on this, ladies and gentlemen, so just bear with me for now. But Basically, for example, if you were, you have to graduate from being a hero to the warrior, because the hero is important, but the hero has a little bit of immature qualities that you want to X out, and you want to become a warrior.
Sure, sure.
When you're the Joker, the magician, you have your trade, and you have to hone your trade in to be something better, and it's like almost like a pyramid in a way. And the idea is to be a king. When you get to a point in your life where you don't have to be a warrior anymore, but you can go ahead and enjoy the spoils of your fruits, so to speak. So I recommend that book, like, because it'll probably go into what you're saying, Wild at Heart, and it probably goes hand in hand with Wild at Heart, is how you were talking about it.
For the most part, I think so.
We were made by our Creator to be kings and queens.
Right.
Yeah, yes.
But
exactly.
We weren't born that way. We were born with that
spark, but you have to cultivate the spark.
But we have to grow, just like in, you know, if you were born into royalty, which we are, you have to be taught how to be a good king.
Sure.
You just don't become one.
Right, which we go with back to our heralds and our magicians and our Obi-Wans.
Yes, you need someone to guide you.
Exactly.
Right.
No epic, be it space epic or legend, will be complete without the hero action. In myth, the hero's battle is often against a powerful enemy in the form of an enormous beast which either guards a prize or threatens a hero's people. The gods in Greek legends look kindly on mortals who show courage when fighting monsters and would find ways of helping. Likewise, the Force aids Luke in his hero deeds. His small fighter craft is insignificant compared with a gigantic Death Star or a colossal Imperial Walker, but with courage, skill, and faith in the Force, he destroys them. He has the Jedi Blade, which is the laser sword that we know and love so much. In the best traditions of heroic action, Luke's sword-like weapon means he must confront his enemies at very close quarters. Like many swords in myth, the Jedi lightsaber imparts a superhuman strength to the hero from which opponents must flee or die. Beastly strength. At Nemea, there lived a lion with skin so tough no weapon could pierce it. The hero Hercules made a massive club, beat the lion, and strangled it. And he used the beast's sharp claws to skin it and wore the hide for his protection.
Oof.
And Siegfried, going back to the German myth, the fearless, Siegfried's guardian, an evil dwarf, led him to the lair of the terrifying dragon Fafnir, who guarded a hoard of gold. Awoken, Fafnir was shocked by Siegfried's complete lack of fear and was too slow to avoid the boy's deadly blow. So, monsters abound and heroic deeds to defeat these monsters.
Like David and Goliath.
Yes. That's right.
Like David and Goliath, exactly. Goliath could be considered the monster of the deeds.
Right.
You know, so. And also you can impart, too, on the David and Goliath story, that whole, you know, Rocky mentality, million to one shot.
Right, exactly.
You know, the little guy, the underdog.
Underdog.
You know.
A little boy. He was
you know?
A little boy.
So all we're talking about today is in our subconscious somewhere. And it's like you know, going back to the Wild and Heart and going back to what you said and going back to the magician, warrior, lover, king. Life is about replaying these models in our head for hopefully a better life.
Right.
It would seem.
Yes.
The Sacred Grove. In myth, one of the trials of the hero is to leave the world behind and go alone in the forest full of danger and sorcery. Only here will he receive knowledge that transforms and aids him on his quest. On Obi-Wan's advice, Luke travels to the planet Dagobah to be trained by the Jedi Master Yoda. In Dagobah's forest, Luke gains a deeper understanding of the Force and of himself. The Force also afforded protection for those fleeing authority. In the case of Robin Hood and his men, he raided the king's barons for the safety and camouflage of the Sherwood Forest. So Sherwood Forest and Robin Hood can be considered Dagobah in Star Wars.
Oh, okay.
The Cave of Evil. The Force is also a symbol for the unconscious mind, which is full of dark and hidden emotions. At Yoda's bidding, Luke enters a cave that is strong with the dark side. Here he must confront his own character alone and discovers that his first enemy is, in fact, himself and his own dark side. Only when he has conquered this will he be able to confront the might of Darth Vader. So?
So there.
And that there you have it.
So the Sacred Grove is an important part of the hero's journey.
Yes. It's where he rests. It's like being in the wilderness.
It's like Superman's Fortress of Solitude. The place where he goes to just kind of get away from it all.
We're just really saying the same thing on different tracks. It's the same album.
The Batcave.
It's the same album. But you want to go ahead and invoke track 12 and 13.
Yes. Right. Have to invoke.
It's all the same crap, ladies and gentlemen.
We're getting out into the wilderness.
All right.
Getting alone.
This one.
That's right, in the wilderness.
This next one kind of hits on what you spoke about earlier. The mystical union. An important stage of the hero's journey is a mystical union with a woman. First, though, the hero must prove himself worthy of her. After meeting Princess Leia, Han Solo begins his own hero journey and is gradually transformed from a selfish individual to a compassionate fighter for the rebellion. Luke's hero's quest is a spiritual one. Han is to become a lover, which I find interesting because you have two main characters.
Right.
Normally, if you're not talking about Star Wars, it's usually one character that goes through all these.
Right.
Like Odysseus, for example, did everything I spoke about in the Odyssey. In the case of Star Wars, it's two heroes.
Mm-hmm.
So Luke is the spiritual journey, which I identify more with Luke, and Han Solo is more of a union with a woman and more of a lover's journey,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, I guess depending on who you are, you kind of can identify with either or.
Well, I feel like in the movie they split the one character, because normally it's the hero and the love in the lover is this one person.
Right,
one
right.
Guy, yeah. But they've.
Well, also going back to the behind the scenes, even Darth Vader was two different people.
Mm-hmm.
There was the father, mm-hmm. and then there was Darth Vader, the evil one. And he just combined the two,
mm-hmm.
but there was two different bad guys, two different people, and then so I thought it was pretty cool. German romance. In one version of Siegfried's story, the hero finds Brunhild asleep on a rock surrounded by fire. Brunhild was a Valkyrie. A warrior maiden and a daughter of the Norse god Odin. Siegfried awakens her with a kiss, and then the two fall in love, pledging their loyalty to each other forever. And for those who don't know what a Valkyrie is, it's basically the goddess warrior in Norse and Germanic mythology.
A goddess warrior.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like they're like the epitome of what you know, the women at the time. If we're talking about self-actualized men, they were self-actualized females.
Mm-hmm. Right, because women are warriors, too.
They could be. I mean...
Yes, they could be.
Did you ever hear that quote the Spartans? The Spartan women were as free as the men. Like, you know, when people talk about history and talk about oppression or whatever, you can go ahead all over areas and say, like, women are oppressed here and this time, whatever, but not in ancient Sparta. The women were equal to men. And they would say, we're equal to men because we're the only ones that give birth to real men.
Hmm.
Oh. Yeah.
Right. A lot of power in them.
Yeah. And they were trained. They didn't fight with the men. They could have, but they didn't. But they were trained with the young boys at a young age to be warriors.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm.
That's very cool.
I like that.
And I like that Leia is, I mean, she's the rescued princess, but she's also a Jedi.
Right.
And she's a warrior, and she's a general.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool, too. Yeah. She's the damsel in distress, but not entirely. She can take care of herself.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So... Sacrifice and betrayal. On his journey, the hero must often make a sacrifice in return for gaining his knowledge and mystical insight. In Luke's case, this knowledge is the realization that the dark side within himself is represented by his own father, Darth Vader. Spoiler!
Yeah.
Oh!
Do you remember that Simpsons? Do you remember that Simpsons episode? Where it's back in 1980, was it 80, Empire Strikes Back, and then Homer comes out of the theater and there's a whole line for Empire Strikes Back, and he goes, oh my god, I can't believe that Darth Vader's Luke's father. Everybody in the line's like, thanks a lot, buddy. On Han's journey, there is a betrayal and the discovery that Leia loves him, but before he can return her love, he must endure a kind of death and be frozen in carbonite for transportation to their lair of Jabba the Hutt. Confrontation and denial. Luke confronts Vader on Cloud City and loses his hand in the battle that ensues. His father retreats and treats Luke to join him or die.
Oh, I think he said he loses his hand in the battle and then he sues.
Let me reread that. Luke confronts Vader on Cloud City and loses his hand in the battle that ensues.
And then sues him for losing his hand.
Ensues also means as it happens or will happen.
It will happen.
His father entreats Luke to join him or die, realizing that his father represents everything that he despises.
Mm.
Luke would prefer to die than become a force of evil. Rather than yield to his father's will, the hero chooses to sacrifice his life and leaps into the abyss.
Now, what hand did he lose?
The right hand.
The right hand. Interesting.
Yeah. And that's the same one that Vader lost.
Right.
According to the original trilogy. Well, Vader lost a lot, but that's a different story.
But also his right hand.
Yeah. In addition to.
The right.
Ferryman to hell. In Greek mythology, the dead had to cross the river Styx to reach the underworld and were taken by a ferryman, Charon, who always had to be paid. And, against a doom-laden sky, Boba Fett now ferries his precious bounty, Han's carbonite-frozen body, to the underworld of Jabba's palace. Baldur's betrayal. In a famous Norse myth, the god Loki was jealous when he heard that everything in creation had vowed never to harm the handsome god Baldur. Discovering that mistletoe had not been included, Loki persuaded Baldur's brother, the blind god Hodur, to throw a mistletoe spear at Baldur, which killed him. Now, cast in carbonite is what happens to Han during the movies. An evil power that can turn someone to stone is found in many myths. It is death, but not death, which leaves the possibility that can be reversed. Here, Han has been turned into a block of carbonite. Normally used as a way of bonding condensed Tabana gas for transport, it can be used to keep life forms in suspended animation, as long as the painful freezing process does not kill them first. And this is comparable to preserving the body in ancient Egyptian mythology and history. Like Han being frozen for Boba Fett's journey, bodies in ancient Egypt were prepared for a life beyond the stars by the process of embalming. Anubis was the jackal-headed god of this ancient art.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
The return of the hero. The hero is ready to return home when he has provided his worth through brave action and dangerous trials. Luke has rescued the princess, destroyed the Death Star, and learned the ways of the Force. In mythology, the hero must now use his knowledge to benefit his people. Returning home to Tatooine, Luke's first act is to rescue Han from Jabba the Hutt. And going to, this is similar to the return of Odysseus in the Iliad and the Odyssey, well, more specifically the Odyssey. Trying to return home from the Trojan Wars, the Greek hero Odysseus has many dangerous adventures. His ship was constantly blown off course because he had offended the sea god Poseidon. Odysseus finally made it home after 20 years. His wife Penelope had waited faithfully for his return, never believing that he was dead. She had resisted the many suitors who wanted to marry her and take Odysseus' place. Descent into the underworld is also very prevalent in mythology. Having returned home, the hero is ready to visit the underworld, either to accompany a heroic task, as with Hercules, or to understand more of the world, like Aeneas. Luke must enter the dark world of the second Death Star to save the side of his father, Darth Vader, that he senses is still good. And this is compared to Hercules in Hell. The hero Hercules became a god by performing 12 tasks. The 12th was the hardest. He had to bring back the three-headed watchdog of Hell, Cerberus. Hercules was greeted by Hades himself, who laughed and said, "The dog is yours, if you can take him." The hero throttled it with his huge arms and dragged it up to the world of day. So going into underworld is important.
That's like going into hell and taking back the keys and the crown.
That's right. That's right.
What's that from?
That's from
the Bible. Bible.
After Why? Jesus died on
really?
The cross.
Really?
Well, you asked where. Asked where was it from?
I meant to say specifically, what is that from?
So that is...
The end of any of the Gospels.
Yes.
Okay.
He goes in, marches into hell, steals the keys back.
Well, he takes them back.
He doesn't steal them. He takes them back.
Well, hold on. Take is another way of stealing.
No. Because they're rightfully his.
Yeah, they're his.
They were stolen.
He's taking them back.
So he's taking them back.
Right.
Taking back the crown and releasing all the captives.
Made an open show of the devil.
Right.
Kind of like Odysseus when he came back with the arrow.
Through, yeah.
You know, that myth where he had to come back and fight for his homeland, and he had to kill all the suitors who were trying to take over his kingdom and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And so he locked them into a room and he speared them all. I mean, not speared them, but arrowed them all.
Uh-huh.
Reconciliation with the father. On his long journey, the mythical hero sometimes needs to make amends with his father to achieve completion. When Luke refused to kill his father at the Emperor's bidding, the Emperor is enraged and turns on him. Helpless, Luke appeals to his father for help. This is Darth Vader's moment to find the good in himself. After an agonizing few seconds of hesitation, Vader's good side wins over the evil. He redeems himself by saving Luke and destroying the Emperor, but it is at a cost of his own life. And the father's prophecy in Roman hero Aeneas, which, if you guys aren't familiar, is basically the start of Roman history. The Aeneid is like the Roman version of the Iliad and the Odyssey.
Oh, okay.
Long to see his dead father, Aeneas, once more, taking the golden branch as an offering for Persephone, queen of the underworld. He went in search of him. Seeing Aeneas' spirit, Aeneas tried to embrace him, but found himself grasping the air. They could talk, however, and Aeneas amazed his son by telling him he would become Rome's first king.
Hmm.
And the godson, back to Arthurian legend, Sir Lancelot, King Arthur's closest friend, had an illegitimate son named Galahad. Father and son were reconciled after many years when the Holy Grail was denied Lancelot, but granted to Galahad, who was the purest of all the knights. Galahad and Lancelot are shown here fighting together. So reconciling with the father is very, very important in mythology.
And it's also
totally.
Very important in scripture. That's the whole reason Jesus came back.
That's right.
To reconcile
us with the Father. Because sin divided us.
Right.
Very cool.
It's all tied together.
The final victory. The hero's journey is over and Luke has attained his quest. The Emperor and the evil that radiated from him have been destroyed, ultimately through an appeal to love, Darth Vader's love for his son. The hero, as you just said. Mm-hmm. The hero companions Han, Leia, and Chewie relax with Luke on the forest moon of Endor, a tumultuous celebration break out in cities across the galaxy. Purifying with flame, that's all over history. Yeah. While the rebels celebrate the Emperor's downfall, Luke burns his father's armor on a ceremonial funeral pyre. In mythology and many religions, fires are believed to purify the soul, setting it free to rise to heaven. For Luke, the victory is the greater because he has won freedom for the galaxy and restored his father's spirit to the good side of the Force. But it's a sad occasion too, since as he just found his father, he had to lose him. Mm. Death of a hero. At the end of his great life, the body of the hero Hercules was placed on the funeral pyre. Mm-hmm. His mortal shade went to wander in the underworld, but his immortal self rose to heaven where he joined the other gods and reconciled with his father Zeus.
Mm. And why did they have to ruin, I think it was the end of Return of the Jedi.
The new one.
Yeah, the one that they added a little special effects to.
The raped version.
Why they put the young Anakin in there at the end, watching the celebration at the Ewok party there?
And also,
after the Empire was destroyed?
Because the one.
But wait a minute.
Liam Neeson and Ewan McGregor went too, weren't they?
No,
they were. That was going to. Were
oh,
going
but they
to,
didn't.
But
do
here's
it.
The thing.
Okay.
They left Ben Kenobi old. But Anakin Skywalker's the young version.
Right.
Yeah.
And Yoda is still old, actually, too.
Yeah.
Why?
Right.
Why?
I think the only reasoning behind that is because they want to it to connect to the first three new ones that they made. I mean, we know Anakin before he was Darth Vader as Hayden Christensen.
Well, then make Ewan McGregor Ben Kenobi.
But didn't they also... But the previous one, didn't it have the old father?
Yes. The previous one
him
had...
Out.
Yes.
You can find all that on YouTube, which is great. Just go ahead and type in... in Return of the Jedi and the newer versus older version.
I don't like the new version. Why they do that?
You know, it's very, very hard to find those old versions on anything. I don't think it's on DVD. You could probably find them on VHS, but my father has them because he used to be big in the 80s. Like, go to the video store and rip the the videos to other videos. So
yes.
I know I have, without a doubt, the original versions, at least from the 80s.
I used to rent a movie from Blockbuster. I used to bring it home. And I used to make my own movies, right? I would put a piece of tape over the tab, and I would erase the trailers that were on that video, put my own trailer on there that I made, and return the video. And I did that to every video I rented from Blockbuster. This is years ago. It got to the point, I kept going to that Blockbuster. People were starting to recognize me from the videotapes, because I did a Batman Year One trailer.
Oh, wow.
I was like, hey, are you in a movie or something? Because when I saw you somewhere, I'm like, I think
you got you're always trying else. To be famous, right? You're always trying to be a celebrity.
Right?
Oh,
you
man.
Are.
So somewhere out there, your videos are...
I think they're burning.
I'll probably find them at Columbus Market.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Frank, you're not going to believe what I just found, bro. Batman Year One with Frank Sasser. Yes, you and Christina Riley at that point.
Oh,
you
yeah.
were on there too as Catwoman.
I'll tell you a funny story. I was at Barnes & Noble the other night, and I ran into a friend I haven't seen in over 10 years, probably even 12. And I know this because I was over at Mercer County College around... between 2000 and 2005, before I studied graphic design, I was doing computer graphics, and I had to take a TV class. And we shot a video of us covering Feed My Frankenstein by Alice Cooper. And it's so bad. My vocals were so bad, but we just did it anyway. And so the other night, I'm at Barnes & Noble, and I'm just in the aisles, and this guy goes, Andy, is that you? Is that you? And I'm like, who's that? He goes, Steve, do you remember me? We did a video together. And it was just like the blast from the past. Apparently, he has that video he's going to put on YouTube. And I've been looking for that video. I actually had a right mind to say, you know what? How can I find that video? Maybe it's on YouTube or not, but I hope he puts it on.
If he puts it on, we'll put it on your website. That'd be hilarious.
Yeah, well, let me review it first.
No reviewing allowed.
Because it's not that good, because I can go to karaoke right now and get a much better version of Feed My Frankenstein. Maybe we can remaster it with a better version.
Feed My Frankenstein.
I've never heard of that. He's still alive, right?
Alice Cooper, is he? No, I think he died.
No, he's alive.
Oh,
no,
he is?
He's alive.
Oh, his career died. That's what it was.
Aww.
Hey, buddy. He didn't die. If you're well versed in the heavy metal world like I am, you know he's still putting out albums.
He is.
Yeah. There are a lot
vinyl
of
vinyl albums?
Yeah, no, vinyl 12 inch albums.
No, actually, they're called compact discs right now.
Ah.
CDs.
CDs.
What are CDs?
Come.
I have some questions I want to ask, and it's getting late.
All right, ask.
Okay, then ask my questions. All right, go ahead.
I want to see how much you guys know about Star Wars, I'll play along, and the listeners can play along as well.
Yeah, but listen, if I'm going to embarrass you with your questions, I'm just be prepared for that because I know my stuff.
Okay, well, we're going to see.
All right.
So should we jump into this segment?
Go ahead.
That guy. That's the one.
We need.
Didn't you recognize this guy here?
Chancellor.
Like, that's the guy from your Senate. You don't recognize him?
I have the hood on.
Listen, I'm really sorry.
I know it's
but
magic.
His disguise is not that much better than Batman's.
Sorry. Don't even start.
But again, I would say, don't you know that's Bruce Wayne? All
right, yeah, but guys, hold on. Before you go to the question, let me just go ahead and clarify something real quick.
Yes.
You see this? This is a hologram.
You know, this is an audio show, right?
Everybody, audience, close your eyes and envision the Emperor and Darth Maul as a hologram in the Phantom Menace.
Okay.
You see this right here?
Yes.
You can't recognize that from that because it's a hologram. It's black and white, blue and white.
And he's transparent and blue.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. I know that's Darth Maul because I can see his eyes.
Darth Maul.
The guy with the tattoo on his head. The red and black
that
tattoo.
Guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, which, okay. By the way, it's also like, if you look at, that's the old, it's supposed to be like the devil, which is right. Why he's divine.
He's actually a stuntman.
Yeah, I know.
He found out he got the part the day of shooting.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's almost as if then when they hid about Luke, I am your father. Did you know that?
They what?
They hid that at the very end, right before a scene that they said to Luke that, you know, Darth Vader is your father. And they wrote in the script differently. Nobody knew about it. George Lucas was known to keep everything hush-hush, even from the actors.
Yeah, like Woody Allen. Woody Allen does.
Yeah, I guess.
So, Luke Skywalker didn't know, well...
Mark Hamill didn't know.
Mark Hamill did not know until the very moment of shooting. George Lucas took him aside and said, by the way, the line is different, and I want you to react to the line when he says it.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it works is the stunt double said, no, Obi-Wan killed your father. Something like that. I'm really not sure, but it wasn't the I am your father. And then when James Earl Jones put his voice for Darth Vader, he said, Luke, I am your father.
Mm-hmm.
And then he reacted to it mm-hmm. the way he did. So it's almost like a very honest act, you know,
reaction. Oh, that's
reaction.
Like a reaction. That's cool.
That's yeah. cool.
All right, we're going to test you. Mostly you, Andrew.
Yeah, because I don't know trivia.
We're just going to see, because Andrew has this way of getting a little cocky with his knowledge about Rocky and Star Wars.
Well, he did kind of eat your lunch that day.
Let the audience show that on every turn basis.
Let the audience show?
Let the audience hear. Behold.
On the
thou
show.
Shalt open your ears that Frank seems to think he's a Rocky nut, but every time we try to prove that,
yeah, you stunt. He stunt you many,
break
many
him.
Times.
I must break you.
He stunt.
Okay.
You
yeah, he
stunt.
Humbled me. He ate my lunch and popped the bag.
Yes.
Okay.
Boom.
Yeah, thanks for the sound effect. Thank you. Okay, here we go.
Put
question number
on.
One. Before every Star Wars movie begins, George Lucas, you know, generously provides us with a little short summary of what had happened previously, correct?
Yeah, okay. The scrolling effect.
Who was the only main character mentioned in that rolling prologue that precedes the events of the original Star Wars film? I'll even give you a multiple
Wait,
choice.
Hold on.
I'll give you a multiple choice.
I got this.
No,
I got this.
Okay, fine.
Who is
it? Princess Leia.
Princess Leia. What do you say?
Darth Vader.
Princess Leia is actually correct.
All
right, okay.
I didn't really understand the question.
Oh my God.
Go ahead.
Princess Leia is correct. She is. She occurs actually in the third paragraph of the. It actually says, pursued by the Emperor's sinister agents, Princess Leia races home aboard a starship, blah, blah, blah. Okay. All right. Not bad. Next question. You ready?
Yep.
Always.
The opening sequence of the original Star Wars film features a riveting battle between an Imperial Star Destroyer and a small freighter carrying Princess Leia. Aboard this freighter are R2-D2 and C-3PO. When we first see these two droids, who is accompanying them?
Give me four choices.
Another protocol droid, Princess Leia Organa, Death Star droid, or another astromech droid?
Another astromech droid.
Wrong.
Wait, I know.
No, you're wrong.
Okay, I'm wrong. But I know what it is then. It's another version of C-3PO, but a lighter silver version, not gold.
The other droid was similar in appearance to C-3PO.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I walked with R2-D2 and
I got mixed up with the
but
Jawas.
Then he vanished into an opening for some time.
I didn't know that's what you call them.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you had said another lookalike C-3PO, I would have said
you would have saw it. You would have saw it, like.
Yeah, but you called it something else. I don't know that. Go ahead.
Who was the first character to utter any kind of speech in the original Star Wars? The first character to utter any kind of speech in the original Star Wars, R2-D2, Darth Vader, Princess Leia, or C-3PO?
C-3PO.
What is it? What is the choice?
Who was the first character to utter any kind of speech?
I'm going
to
say C-3PO because I'm not going to include R2-D2 beeping as speech. I'm going to say it's C-3PO.
What do you think?
Oh, you mean just talking? I thought you meant it.
Any kind of speech. Oh my! Well, I want to know what you thought. I got to know.
I didn't understand the question.
What did you think I was saying?
I thought you meant which of these characters actually uttered a speech, like they gave a speech, not that they.
Four scores. C-3PO.
It's a correct thing I do.
Well, C-3PO has a reputation for being like a loudmouth.
Okay.
Yeah.
A complainer.
That's an understatement. But go
ahead. He actually says, "Did you hear that?"
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So far, I'm two for one.
You didn't give me a chance to answer, though.
All right. Two for one, and I'm going to go ahead and let that one slide.
The answer is you answer like that.
No, I got to understand the question first.
Okay. In a last attempt to save stolen rebel plans to the Death Star, Princess Leia downloads them into R2-D2's memory banks. Remember that?
Yes.
Okay. R2 and C-3PO are then able to deport the freighter that they're on using an escape pod. Mm-hmm. Why isn't their escape pod destroyed?
Oh, I know.
I know.
All right, well, somebody answer. Guess first.
Because they see it and they say, oh, there's no life forms on it, and they let it go.
That's right.
So what are you saying? It goes undetected?
It goes undetected.
Well, it doesn't
there's no life forms. It was just an ejected pod.
Right.
Just ejected, and because there are no flesh humans, there are no life forms on it.
So they let it go.
They see it, but they let it go.
But they let it go.
There are no life forms
because
on there.
Because there's no, don't worry, there's no life forms on that one.
Right. She's right.
That is correct. Imperial troops hold their fire as there are no life forms aboard.
Which is like, why wouldn't you shoot it anyway, just in case? But.
Right. But that's the luck of the draw.
The luck of it.
But I mean, that's the beautiful thing about it, though. If you think about it, like we read these legends, something happens in that way.
Right.
Like even like the you know Old Testament, you know, why didn't baby Moses drown? But instead, he was picked up by the Egyptians.
What are the chances that the princess of Pharaoh, the daughter of Pharaoh, picks him up?
Right.
And he's raised as a king.
Princess Leia is unfortunately captured very early on in the film by Darth Vader, who claims her correctly to be a spy. Mm-hmm. Princess Leia denies this accusation. She suggested she's just a member of the Imperial Senate on a diplomatic mission to which
Alderaan.
Planet? Which planet are you saying?
Alderaan.
Who are you?
I agree.
Correct, Alderaan. Interesting fact.
Don't they blow up Alderaan?
Later on.
Did you know that spoiler, Shirley, Cindy Williams from Laverne and Shirley, she was actually auditioned for Princess Leia?
I could see that.
Cindy Williams. Yeah, I could see that. Okay. All right. Question number six.
I just want to go ahead. I am crushing this test that you so
you got,
went out of your way to try to stump me.
You got one wrong, though, out of six.
There's only six questions?
No, so far this is the sixth one.
There's 15, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Princess Leia tries to throw off her Imperial captives by telling them where the Rebel base was located. Which system did she send them off to investigate? Which system?
It's very similar to Tatooine where Lucas from, but it's Datooine. D-A-T is a system.
Datooine.
D-A-T. Oh, man, I might get my spelling right, but that's where she sent them. What's the answer?
Princess Leia throws them off. Datooine was never shown in the movie, but the Empire did discover the remains of a rebel base and it had been deserted for quite some time. Datooine is the answer.
I remember that.
Do you remember?
I remember that, like, symbol, that line or whatever.
And let me finish the question before you just...
Because he
totally
knows it.
Oh,
Christina, chance to answer. Thank you.
Christina, do me a favor. Just follow my lead on this. And you will do very, very well.
You're going to get another one wrong. I know you are.
Try me.
C-3PO has this way of name calling when it comes to conversations with his little buddy R2-D2.
Yes.
Right? Okay. During an argument, just preceding their breakup after landing on Tatooine, C-3PO refers to R2-D2 by which of the following cruel phrases? undersized rust bucket, pile of completely uncouth nuts and bolts, nearsighted scrap pile, or round-headed galactic trash heap?
That one.
Yeah.
Round-headed galactic trash heap.
I agree.
Wrong.
I'm going with your lead. What's the matter? You're supposed to help me out.
Nearsighted scrap pile.
Yeah, they're tough. That's like they're all the same thing, saying the same thing in four different ways.
Oh, please.
Let's go. Next question.
Okay, fine. Question 8. As far as the viewer
is able... I see what you did here. I see how you decided to test.
As far as the viewer is able to observe, which of the two droids is forcibly taken by the Jawas? Forcibly. C-3PO?
I know this one already.
R2-D2, Death Star droid, or both are forcibly taken?
As far as the viewers are able to see,
yeah,
it's C-3PO, because you do not know that R2-D2 is taken until they're both found in the same location.
Wrong. See, it's actually R2-D2. C-3PO locates the Jawas first, but as far as the viewer is aware, he volunteers to come into their custody. R2-D2's story is a little different. He makes his way down a frightening ravine where
demobilized. And he gets shot.
He's all, you know, electrified.
I forgot about that.
Okay. See, he's only a man. He's only a man.
The first movie was so much better.
He's cut. He's a man.
The first movie is still the best one.
I think I agree. Question 9, we're almost there.
No, I don't agree.
No CGI.
I have a new love for The New Hope, but I love the other two more, but continue.
Go ahead.
The Jawas. Mm-hmm. The Jawas make their way to the humble abode of Owen Wallace.
Are we going through the whole New Hope this plot sequence here? This is a big time spoiler alert.
Hey, whatever. They should have seen it 15 years ago.
15?
Actually, 30, but...
15 years is the
oh,
cap.
The limit.
But why 15?
I don't know.
He's thinking
it's half of 30.
There you go. I knew he'd say 30, so...
Whatever.
Right, so they make their way to the humble home of Owen Lars and Beru Whiteson.
Okay.
Aunt and uncle of the one Luke Skywalker.
Their last name is Whiteson?
Yeah, Whiteson.
Okay.
You didn't know that?
No, go ahead.
I don't know either. The intention of the Jawas is to sell several droids to this humble little family. Most importantly, it seems, is that they purchase a translator who speaks which language?
Translator droid.
I need
Do I have a multiple choice?
Yes.
Uncle says, I need a droid that can speak.
I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly, but I'm going to try. Bochi, Bothan, Hootis, or Shewook?
I'm going to go Bochi.
Me too.
Bochi. Yeah. You are right. Bochi. The aunt makes it clear to Luke that they must have a translator droid who speaks Bochi.
Oh, it's the aunt that said it.
Okay, question 10. This is it. Almost there. True or false? R2-D2 is among the initial two choices made by Owen Lars for purchase.
True.
No.
True. Trust
R2-D2?
Me. True. Among the two. True.
No.
Among
yes.
the two.
And I'll tell you why. Because he first chose the other red droid.
Right.
And it got destroyed, blown up, and then his second choice was
R2-D2.
R2-D2.
So he's
Wait.
Wrong.
No, I know. No, I take.
You said true. Trust me, true. Here's why.
I know why. Because it was first C-3PO, and then there were two choices after C-3PO. That's what happened. And then C-3PO recommended by saving R2-D2 to get R2-D2. That's not fair.
I would have gotten that one.
No, you actually got it right. Under duress, you got it right. 4 more questions, and we're done. When Luke Skywalker and Obi-Wan Kenobi first meet Han Solo, Han Solo tells him his ship, the Millennium Falcon, made what run in less than what parsecs?
1,200 parsecs.
What run in what parsecs? What
the run? Kessel run in 1,200 parsecs. Kessel is the answer.
Kessel run in how many?
Well, according to Ray, the new one was 1,400, but according to Han, it's 1,200. So I'm going to go with Han and say 1,200.
What would you say?
1,300.
You're half right. It was the Kessel run, but it was 12 parsecs.
Well,
12? I said that.
He said that. Yes, he did.
He said 1,200. He said 1,200 like 3 times.
Oh. All right.
Roll it back 30 seconds. Hit the 30-second rollback button and listen.
Oh, all right. Well.
All right. Okay, question 12. On board the Death Star, R2-D2 locates where Princess Leia is being held prisoner. Where does C-3PO tell Luke where to find her? And if you'd like, I'll give you multiple choice if you'd like.
Go ahead.
Level 1138, detention block THX. Level 5, detention block TK421. Level 5, detention block 3263827.
That
level
one.
5, detention block AA23.
The second from the last one. That one seems the most viable.
I say AA23.
Okay. AA23 is right.
Oh, God!
Question 13. What was that, my man? You ready, Chris?
I'm ready.
In stormtrooper disguise, Luke and Han pretend they have a Wookiee prisoner and tell Princess Leia's guards Chewbacca is a prisoner transfer from where? Cell block 327, cell block 1138, or cell block 326, 3827.
I'm going to go 1138, and I'm going to tell you why. Because George Lucas...
He has to show his work.
The first movie of George Lucas is THX 1138. I'm going to go with that.
What do you think?
I'll agree with that.
If I get that, that's the hardest one.
That is correct.
Yeah!
Again, because his first movie was
THX
1138, 73 or 4.
71.
Ooh.
Okay.
That was a bonus. That doesn't count.
I was 11.
Question 4.
Question 4 or 14?
Question 14. When our heroes escape the Death Star, they are pursued by TIE fighters. Han and Luke man the Falcon's quads... The laser tarts. Mm-hmm. How many did Luke shoot down?
Ugh.
And I can give you a line from the movie to help.
Go ahead.
Luke only shot one and Han said, "That's two, you owe me." Luke shot three and Han said, "Don't worry, she'll hold together."
Oh, I know what
Luke
he
shot two and Han said, "Great kid, don't get cocky."
That one.
Luke shot none and Han said, "I'm in it for the money."
It's that one. He don't get cocky.
Don't get cocky.
Don't get cocky is right. Two TIE fighters were shot down by Luke, making both heroes tied in their blaster skills.
Great kid, don't get cocky.
Final question. Here we go. When Luke destroys the Death Star, how many ships escape the blast? And I can give you multiple choices.
Okay, hold on.
I don't have no idea.
Okay, go.
3. Luke's X-Wing, the Millennium Falcon, and Darth Vader's TIE Advanced. 4 ships, Luke's X-Wing, the Falcon, Wedge Antilles' damaged X-Wing, and a Y-Wing fighter. 5 ships escaped. Luke's X-Wing, the Falcon, the damaged X-Wing, a Y-Wing fighter, and Darth Vader's TIE fighter. Or 3, the X-Wing fighter, the Falcon, the TIE fighter.
You mean Darth Vader's TIE fighter?
Yeah, Darth Vader's.
I'm going to go 5.
I said the 3.
You say the X-Wing, the Millennium Falcon, right?
And Darth Vader.
And you're going to say 5?
Yeah, those 3 plus the other 2. The X-Wing damage and the Y-Wing. Oh, wait. I'm going 3. Because the Y-Wing gets destroyed. I know that. I'm going 3. Final answer, 3.
You're going 3?
I'm going 3.
So X-Wing, the Falcon,
and Vader.
And Vader.
Or...
Uh-oh.
No.
You just said final answer.
Stop. I'm going 4. I'm going to tell you why. Because Wedge does not die. 4 is my final answer. 4.
But you already said final answer.
Double, triple, final answer, 4.
Wrong.
Oh,
it's
no.
5.
Oh, no. Your original answer.
This is my original answer. I'm going with the original answer.
Your original final answer.
See, you thought too much. You were right.
The only vessels to escape that catastrophic blast. So here's how you scored, my man.
All right.
Are you ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
You got 8 out of 15 right.
Oh, that's good. Better than me.
So you got 7 wrong, which is not bad.
All right.
Now, you asked me 2 Rocky questions, and I got both of them wrong.
Yeah, so you still...
Now, if you gave me 15, okay, I think I could maybe do something with that.
I'll give you 1 right now.
Oh, okay.
And you'll get
go,
it wrong.
Go. I want to hear it. Go ahead.
Okay. In Rocky 3, Rocky's swimming, and he doesn't do well. What was Paulie's response to that, and what did Apollo respond to Pauly?
I don't want to paraphrase what Pauly said, but I know what Apollo said. Pauly said, I'm going to go for broke here. Pauly said, he can't swim with a name like Rock. And then Apollo said to Pauly, you keep telling him that and he'll be nothing.
Very good.
Hot.
I gotta tell you, I don't even remember him ever swimming.
Wow. All right, well, this was the 12th episode of History by Fire, man. Congratulations.
Yes, apparently, thank you. Apparently, 12 is very, very special. Why is 12 special?
I don't know. It just is. It's just a common thing.
It just is.
He's like, dude, 12 is special.
No,
make it work.
A dozen shows, you know, that means you're going to stick around.
Yeah. Cool. You're just not a fly-by-night.
12 solid weeks, too, of just constant preparation. I mean, it doesn't feel bad. It feels good. So
good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, my listeners, to listening to the 12th very special episode of History by Fire. Please tune in to probably next week or, whenever I get the 13th one, which will be next week.
Tune in probably to next week. I like that.
Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will catch you guys soon. Before we go, though, where can we find... Actually, I forgot to, say goodbye to my guests, Christina.
Yes.
And Frank Sasso.
Thank you.
Why don't you tell the people where they can find you? Because, I know you like to teach really cool classes.
Yes.
I mean, if you don't want to self-promote yourself, then don't do it.
We teach a class together called Body Combat. It's a mixed martial arts, boxing-inspired cardio workout. We teach at RWJ Hamilton. You can check the schedule. And I also teach for now in Plainsboro. I'm subbing for a friend. And various other places in Philly.
Plainsboro is Princeton.
Go to the Facebook page, which is...
Yeah, facebook.com/bodycombatnj.
We usually post, where we're teaching, what classes. And also, you can hear our podcast, which is...
Who's Your Daddy?
Who's Your Daddy?
And you can find that at ahistorywithgod.org, or you could just type in Who's Your Daddy on iTunes, on Stitcher Radio, Blueberry, any podcast directory pretty much has us listed as Who's Your Daddy's. Who's Your Daddy?
Who's
and it's
your
a
daddy?
Godcast, not a podcast.
That's right.
And always, you can catch me here every week on historybyfire.com. Also, Twitter, hashtag History in Flames. And also, I am on Facebook as historybyfire.com. I also have a new app called The Spartan for you Google Play Android users.
Yeah.
And my beloved iPhone users, I know, I'm waiting for
it to be available. It's coming,
I promise you, because I have an iPhone and I'm still waiting. Frank does not have an iPad and he's getting all the benefits, but definitely just go to the website, historybyfire.com, and download the app. Thank you so much for joining us.
Ooh, the cantina music.
And we will catch you next week. Say goodbye, everybody.
Because I love this music. I just want to listen to this. This is good.
facebook.com/historybyfire Follow us on Twitter at History in Flames. Have an idea for a topic or a question for Andrew? Fill out the contact form on our website, historybyfire.com. Subscribe to our RSS feed in the podcast section of the website to get automatic access to episodes when they post. And most of all, download our free app, Spartan, and get your digital shove today. It's on the website under Spartan App. If you're listening through iTunes, leave us a 5-star review. Until next time, keep those torches burning.
This podcast is a production of Spartan Studios, LLC. Say hi, Bruno. Good dog.
Wow, what an ending! Who'd have thought Darth Vader was Luke Skywalker's father?
Aw, thank you!
Well, thank you, Mr. Blow the Picture for me.